Hi, Richard here. Well done. You've just clicked on a little bit of audio that we thought you'd like. We made it for you specially. Enjoy. If you go back, I don't know how many years, to me the weekends at 6:30 on a Sunday night always kind of featured, that was sitting in front of the telly time. Now, it was Countdown, sure, but it was also, it's the modern version, still nice. Used to be Walt. Remember Walt would sing this? Oh, he'd be settling in. Actually, I can remember the Mickey Mouse Club, come to think of it. M-I-C-K-E-Y-M-O-U-S-E. Hours spent. Sitting there asking the big questions of life. Just staring. Yeah. My daughter came up to me the other day and said, okay, we've got to get the following Disney listings. And these are animations that go back 20, 30, 40 years, more. And still have a currency. When was the last time you settled in with one of the Disney classics? They somehow hold up. Not all of them. Some of them are incredibly dated. And in fact, the datedness is often part of the fun. But gee, other stories just somehow manage to survive and stay current, stay glossy looking. I wonder how that went. I'm always fascinated by the world of the animator. Because I think in those early days, it was kind of a brave new frontier. People didn't really know what it was they were getting into. That's certainly the case with Paul Carson. Paul Carson started at Walt Disney Studios in 1953 as a traffic boy. He's still in animation. How did that work out? He's lolling around his palatial apartment somewhere right as we speak. Hey, Paul.
Hi.
Paul, thanks so much for doing this. Let's go. Can we jump right back a million years, back to 1953? What did Walt Disney Studios look like? What was it like there?
Well, I'll tell you, it was a delightful experience in my young life. I started over there for $35 a week in Burbank delivering mail to all the artists there. There were around 300 artists working on the feature film Lady and the Tramp. And I would take mail to every single artist there, and I got to know them pretty well, and I even took mail up to Walt. He was up on the third floor. They had a large building, eight large wings, and these different artists were working at their desks, and while I delivered mail to them, they would give me lessons in animation, and about a year later I was working on Lady and the Tramp myself.
Wow.
I got to work on a very famous scene, if you remember.
Sure. Which scene?
Well, it was when Lady and the Tramp were in the alley eating spaghetti, and Tramp rolled that meatball over to Lady. I am between that.
That was
scene.
You?
Yep.
That's a classic scene.
That was a lot of fun.
What about, you went on to work on Sleeping Beauty. Is there a scene in that you particularly worked on?
I worked on a raven that sat on Maleficent's shoulder. Mark Davis was the animator, and Dale Barnhart was the assistant, and I was his, what we call, in-betweener. And that was an interesting experience, of course. But I got to know Walt because 3 years later I became an assistant director, and I would do the TV animated commercials for the Mouse Club, Mickey Mouse Club. I worked with Annette Funicello and some of those children. They would do animated live-action commercials.
That's right. I remember those.
Paul, remember the Baker's Instant Chocolate commercial.
Yeah, so we never got those because they were all different products in the States. But I remember that kind of interaction for promos for the show. You also did the, half a dozen books on how to draw Disney characters as well. So you got to work with Walt quite a lot during all that.
I was delighted to work on 6 books on how to draw Mickey, Pluto, Goofy, Chip and Dale, Donald Duck, and Jiminy Cricket. Hmm. And that was a real thrill, of course. I understand they're having a big show down in Armadale at 1092 High Street, I guess it's called the Silver K Gallery.
Silver K, that's right. Silver K have got a big display of all this artwork, but which is the reason I've grabbed you on. Hey, Paul, working with Walt, you did work with him very closely on specific projects. What kind of guy was he? All right, I'll just leave it at that and let you try. You can do the colouring in. What kind of guy was he?
Well, first of all, Walt had 6 units. They were made up of a director, an assistant director, layout, and a background artist. And I was in one of those units, and Walt would review everything these units were producing. We met with Walt every month, and he would critique all of our work. We were doing an animated cartoon on Donald Duck on how to have an accident at work. And Walt and Nick Nichols, the director I worked for, and myself would meet in a projection room, and he would have us project the animated show on the screen. They were in pencil, though, that we didn't ink and paint those. We showed it to him in pencil, and the characters moved, but he was very congenial. He was a man that knew what he wanted. He had a sign on his desk, I can remember, it says, "Those who fail to plan to fail." He always had an agenda.
Paul, was he the sort of guy, don't get me wrong here, he steered a huge empire and created a genre and did all sorts of things, but sometimes the people who do that are kind of, how can I put it, they're certainly in control, and they can on occasion not listen to others. Was he of that sort, or did he have to steer the ship, or was he someone who listened to other people?
He definitely listened to other people. But he knew what he wanted.
Mm.
I can remember one time I was in the back of the projection room. I was running the show, and Nick and Walt were sitting right in front of me. And then in front of them, of course, was the screen. And my director kept looking at Walt to see his reaction to what we had done. And Walt said, "Paul, stop the show a minute." And he looked at Nick, and he said, "Nick, don't stare at me. And don't look for my approval." He said, "You need to do things that you would be pleased with yourself. Don't try to please other people, especially me." And he said, "I'd like to hear and see what you do. What are your ideas?" And he said, "So let's go on with it." And then I went on with the show. But he always was interested in what people did themselves. He didn't dictate. He told me once that whenever he gave somebody the responsibility to do something, he would also give them the authority, and that one without the other is dead, he said.
That's very interesting. You know, that management style, when it exists even today in 2008, is often the best, you know, to make individuals responsible. So they understand what they're responsible for, and to give them the authority to make the decisions in their area. That's kind of, but at the same time, be someone who ultimately makes choices about the direction. You know, everyone puts forward their ideas, he makes a choice, and then we all head that way. That's kind of classic good leadership, really, isn't it? It's no wonder the company went on well.
Yeah, he's a very considerate person. He would say to an artist that presented something, he said, "Well, this is good. I like what you've done." But he said, "How about doing it this way?" He would always suggest another way of doing it. But he wouldn't criticize somebody for a bad idea.
That's interesting. Paul, let me ask you some cartoon questions. They're critical ones, and I think you might be in a place after 45 years in the industry where you can answer some of the questions that plague us. What's the deal with cartoon characters only having 3 fingers?
3 fingers. I know this sounds strange, but when they were animating in those days, you're in the, you know, in the 30s and 40s, the cartoonist told me, I asked him that question, "How come 3 fingers?" They said, "Well, it was less work." You know, you have to animate 4 fingers, now it's only 3. And that was the answer I always got.
Fantastic. All right, let me give you this one. One of the classic, it's almost an eternal question. Goofy's a dog. Pluto's a dog.
Right.
Goofy drives cars, talks, wears clothes. Pluto, nothing. Gets bitten on the nose by a crab. Did Goofy just have a better agent? Or was Pluto designed originally as Goofy's dog? How does that work?
Originally, the cartoons of Mickey Mouse, of course, had his pet dog, Pluto. Mm. And they made several cartoons that way. And one day, Walt, I remember this story because he was in a what they call a storyboard meeting where they pinned up the sketches on a wall, and they would talk about the story looking at these single sketches. It's sort of like a comic strip. And a traffic boy came in with some mail for some of the artists that were in that room, and there was a letter there for Walt. And the traffic boy, recognizing Walt was in the room, was a little taken by seeing Walt, and he got a little embarrassed, and he walked up to Walt and he says, "Oh, well, here, Mr. Disney, here's a letter for you." And he walked out of the room, and the story I heard that Walt said, "Now there is an interesting character." He said, "That young man was a little embarrassed seeing that I was here, but," he said, "that would make an interesting cartoon. Why don't we stand up Pluto and put clothes on him, and we'll make him talk." And that's the story I heard, that that's how Goofy got started.
Fantastic.